Hello, I'm Peter Hagel. This is episode 0256 of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0256. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet once again Edward Meyer from Ripley's Believe It or Not. They're having their second annual Strange Mail Contest. What was the origin of this whole thing?
Robert Ripley himself got more mail than any other person during his lifetime, and a lot of it was some pretty strange stuff. A banana, a coconut, a bowling pin. And we said, well, you know, there's people out there that are pretty creative. I wonder if we have a contest and we challenge people. You know, Ripley's gets the weirdest mail already, but to get weird mail with no packaging just sounded like a contest in the making.
Bob Dorigo Jones from our Let's Be Fair segments talks about this year's Wacky Warning Labels contest.
It's gotten to the point now where we're looking for themes in the warning labels because we've noticed some distinct themes from year to year with the warning labels that are being sent to us by people all over North America.
Peter Smith, the founder of Daneson, a company that makes high-end artisanal toothpicks. How did this business come to be?
I just spent a long time wanting to start my own business, and then one time I had this brainwave where I knew that my grandmother loved toothpicks, and I just really wanted to start a business that was, I guess, based on really sound business principles of trying to do the right thing. And when those two ideas sort of came together, I thought, you know, hey, maybe I can start a toothpick company that's a bit more than anything else that's out there.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0256, was Peter Hagel, a musician and a lifelong friend from when we were little kids. I think we knew each other since we were 8. He's currently living in Costa Rica. He's building a house there, and he also performs, and he's actually built a stage there, too. So congratulations on all the good work you've been doing there, Peter, and thank you very much for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff. And we begin with the Darwin file this time around, because if you listen to this show often enough, then you know the tree of life is often self-pruning. Now, certain athletes and competitors assume risks when they compete for the love of the game. Football players know there is a possibility that they will break their necks when they tackle each other head first. Boxers know they might get brain damage when they let large men punch them around the head for a living. So it's hard to think of the subject of today's story as a victim. He did, however, pay the ultimate price for doing what he loved. What should have been a fun way to kick off the 4th of July weekend quickly turned tragic for a South Dakota man who choked to death while eating hot dogs during a competitive eating contest. The crowd was stunned when one of the contestants, Walter Eagletail, age 47, began to choke on the fatal weenie. Paramedics who were called to his side tried in vain to save him. "There was someone doing CPR when we arrived," said Custer County Sheriff Rick Wheeler. "Basically, he probably just suffocated. It got lodged in his throat, and they couldn't get it out." Eagletail's death put a damper on the festivities sponsored by the Custer Chamber of Commerce. Organizers canceled a planned pie-eating contest for the next day. Wheeler said he was not sure if the death would prompt organizers to make changes to the contest next year, because you can't have men choking on weenies all over a small, close-knit community like that. Deaths during competitive eating contests have happened in the past. A Romanian man choked to death during a sausage-eating contest last year in that country. And in 2012, a Florida man choked to death after eating dozens of live cockroaches during a contest. But whether it is swallowing weenies, sausages, or cockroaches, those in the world of competitive eating say safety is always a top priority. Okay, so if safety is always a top priority, then why weren't paramedics on standby during a contest like this anyway? I guess in a competition, this would be the ultimate choke. Suddenly, the Buffalo Bills losing in four straight Super Bowl games doesn't look so bad, does it? Yes. Anyway, here is a quote from a woman. Just one simple word. Ouch! That's what a Florida woman who allegedly had crack cocaine crammed in her vajayjay said during a traffic stop on June 24th in Wabasso. Indian River County Sheriff's Office investigators pulled over Robert William King and Jennifer Crosby because it appeared that their vehicle had a window tint violation. Now, when King was asked for his license, the 47-year-old responded, "I don't have a license. I'm habitual." Well, there's a statement that's either very honest or very stupid. Anyway, the 42-year-old Crosby supposedly seemed skittish, and a female deputy was summoned to the scene to look for drugs. After she arrived, Crosby allegedly confessed to having drugs in her vagina. "Ouch," she said. "The foil is hurting the inside of my vagina." Yeah, the foil is hurting the inside of my vagina. Wow, if I had a nickel for every time I heard that, I'd have a nickel. King was arrested on a habitual traffic offender charge. Crosby was arrested on possession of cocaine and possession of drug paraphernalia charges. Okay, but what about that tinted window violation? You're not going to let him slide on that, are you? Yeah. And while we're talking about that particular body part, an American student went to Tübingen, Germany, and then on a dare for a photo shoot. According to a fire service official, he went back where he came from, and I don't mean the United States. On the Microbiology Institute campus there stands a 6-foot sculpture of that part of the female anatomy through which people normally enter the world. But once he went into it, the student couldn't get out of it. It took 4 firefighters to accomplish the delivery. They did it, by the way, according to a local newspaper, without the use of forceps. Paging Dr. Freud. Paging Dr. Freud. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, San Francisco's activist board of supervisors, among the boldest in the U.S. to rid their cities of obnoxious goods and services, added disposable plastic water bottles to the list in March, which also joins circumcision, plastic shopping bags, and nutrition-challenged Happy Meals that contain toys. Interesting list. The water bottle vote was unanimous, covering distribution on city-controlled property. Compared to the cliff-hanging 2012 vote of 6-5, in which the board finally decided to ban unclothed people from the streets, mostly men, of course, where until then some freely wandered downtown sidewalks stark naked. Yeah, but did the naked guys have a water bottle or a Happy Meal with them? And for that matter, were they circumcised? Anyway, I guess I don't really need to know. That's TMI, isn't it? Let's just get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? The folks at Ripley's Believe It or Not are looking for your mail. They are inviting the public to send them the strangest items they can think of without using any packaging. Why? Well, to tell us about that, we welcome back to the program Edward Meyer, the VP of Exhibits and Archives for Ripley's Believe It or Not. Hi, Edward.
Hey, thanks for having us back on. It's a pleasure.
Thanks for being back on the program. So this is something that you've done before. It's the second annual Strange Mail Contest. So how did this all come up in the first place?
All right. Well, I got to tell you that the PR guys put that annual bit in there. I think that's sometimes a little bit of a curse, but hopefully there'll be a third annual too. But second time we're doing it. Last year, my daughter lives about 100 miles away from where I am in Orlando, Florida, and I can't even remember why at this point, but she couldn't come home for my birthday. She made a rubber chocolate cake out of window caulking and food coloring to make it look chocolate, and sent me a piece of this cake with a little message attached to it saying, you know, "Sorry, Dad, I can't be home for your birthday, but I hope you enjoy your chocolate cake." And this piece of cake, it's still sitting on my desk, is so realistic looking that everybody that saw it said, I can't believe that that thing came through the mail just like that. I said, yep, no packaging, the letter attached to it, the stamp and the address right on the cake, and it got to me. Now, it didn't come from a long way away, but it still came to me, and that was a shock to everybody that saw it. So we started thinking, what else might get through the mail? And we looked in our archives, and Robert Ripley himself got more mail than any other person during his lifetime, and a lot of it was some pretty strange stuff, a banana, a coconut, a bowling pin. And we said, well, you know, there's people out there that are pretty creative. I wonder if we have a contest and we challenge people. You know, Ripley's gets the weirdest mail already, but to get weird mail with no packaging just sounded like a contest in the making. So we did it last year. We got 89 entries in 84 days, which I'm not saying is good or bad, but, you know, it averages more than one a day. So it put a smile on our face, you know, 84 days in a row. And we got things from a piece from Ireland. We got a piece from Russia, 17 different states. And in general, we had some fun with it.
Now,
the best of that stuff goes into our museums. We're actually making displays on unusual mail. So people are getting some fame from a little bit of effort.
Okay, now, as you say, and I want to clarify this, no packaging of any kind. So what exactly does that mean? You can't put it in a box, or do you just put a stamp on something? How does that work?
Well, that's exactly how it works. No envelope, no bubble wrap, tapes allowed, but no packaging, nothing that's protecting the item, nothing that's covering the item. The stamp and the address have to be directly on the object. The object can be anything, and it doesn't really have to be weird. It just has to get to me. Every single thing that lands on my desk wins a Ripley book. And that's, you know, first and foremost, we're out to have some fun. Second, we're out to give away some books so that people, you know who Ripley's is and, you know, have something that they can say, I won a Ripley book. And all I did was send them a rubber ducky or a wooden spoon or a roll of toilet paper. Every single thing wins a prize. The end of each week, we're going to give away our brand new book, Reality Shock, which is not even in the stores yet, so you'd be the first kid on the block to get one. And this is our new annual, our premium book line, roughly a $30 book with about 1,000 stories and 500 color pictures in it. And the end of the summer, we're in week four out of a 12-week contest. End of the 12 weeks, the grand prize winner will win a complete Ripley library. So it's worth at least $500 just by winning once. But if you send me multiple items through the 12 weeks, you'll get a Ripley book for every single item. You could potentially win 30, 40 books here.
Wow. Well, the thing that I'm most surprised about, as you know, we're talking to you from Canada. And you've already mentioned that you have received in the past items from Russia, items from Ireland. The first thing that comes to mind is it's one thing for things to be moved from city to city or even state to state, but to cross international lines, I find some post offices might be a little problematic with getting things literally through customs.
Well, I guess that is an issue. I don't want to confirm that because last year we did get a letter written on a piece of birch bark from Canada, and that's the only thing we got from Canada, but I'm from Toronto originally. Don't hold that against me, but I'd love to see some more items from Canada. We did a little presentation up in Sudbury last year, and they all looked at me like I was from Mars. Oh, our post office would never put that through. But the post office actually prides themselves on delivering anything except perishable food. That's the only rule that they put to our contest, and they've broken that themselves. Our winner last year was a McDonald's Happy Meal. Hamburger, French fries, apple pie, glued to a plastic plate, and that came through the mail. So the sky's the limit. It's all about creativity. It's all about fun. Give it a try. Don't assume the post office won't deliver it, and we'll see what happens. This year, so far, we've had a piece from Copenhagen, Denmark, a lady's purse shaped like a running shoe. And, you know, Copenhagen's a long way away. If they can get something from Denmark, I bet you can get something from Canada.
Yeah. Well, you know, to defend Canada Post in this particular case, you know, there are some people in some circles who would maintain that McDonald's is not necessarily perishable food.
That is indeed the question. I mentioned earlier that the best of the stuff we're getting, we plan to put in Ripley Museums, do a, you know, a fun display on unusual mail. And we've got the hamburger on display in our museum in Atlantic City. And we're almost a year later since we first got it, and it has not perished at all. It looks exactly the same as the day I received it.
One of the things, I've seen a few of the items that are listed as what you received last year, and you've already mentioned a few of them, but I'm just trying to picture the person walking into the post office with a rubber skeleton.
4-foot-tall Halloween-type prop. Does not fit in anybody's mailbox, which is the great wonder on this thing that it arrived in one piece, because it certainly will not fit in a mailbox. Came all the way from Texas, so, you know, a couple thousand miles. And it is now also on display in Atlantic City, but it was hanging on my door for a couple months, and it was a great conversation piece. I mean, you just can't imagine how somebody got it here without it getting broken. You know, there must be 50 pieces to a skeleton at least, and absolutely still intact.
Now that this is the second annual Strange Mail Contest, and as you say, you're hoping that there will be a third and maybe even a fourth and beyond, what source of pride does your daughter gain from all of this?
A lot, apparently. Reuters recently released a video that was shot last year of me talking about the cake, and it's gone, you know, international. People in the Philippines and India and China saw it, and so she's thinking she's got, you know, a big stake in this contest. She's as happy as a lark.
So what do people have to do? I would assume they would have to go to the Ripley website and find the address that they'd be mailing this to.
Well, that's probably the easiest way. If you go to Ripley's.com, there are some, you know, fine print that, you know, what we're going to do with it and what we don't take responsibilities for. But, you know, it's a pretty straightforward contest. It's anybody can play. All ages are welcome. Ripley's.com will tell you where our address is, and that's really the only piece of information you need. But there's also a one-page little form that we're asking people to fill out telling us what they're going to send, which allows us to keep track of the percentage of things that are actually getting to us versus what people have tried to get to us. And right now it's about 4-1. So, you know, the post office does work.
So we should mention that the contest runs through until September the 5th, and for the mailing address, contest rules, and other details, including that questionnaire you mentioned earlier, people can go to ripleys.com/mail, and all the information will be there.
Yeah, and they know pretty darn quick if what they sent got to me, because I will respond to the email, and they'll get a book in the mail. Hey, you've just won.
Excellent. Edward, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. This is certainly something...
My pleasure.
It's certainly something that's very, very unique. And, you know, I guess we should stop using the word unique when talking about Ripley's, believe it or not, because everything from Ripley's is unique. So thank you very much for being on the show once again.
Thank you for having us. Mail me something from Montreal. A done smoked meat sandwich would be good.
Oh, don't tempt me, Edward. Don't tempt me. I may have to talk to the folks at Dunn's about that, see if they want to comply. Edward Meyer from Ripley's Believe It or Not. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0256, and you'll find links to Ripley's website and all the information and rules you need to send in your mail for their Strange Mail Contest.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Pay very close attention. There could be a test leader.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Bob DiRigo-Jones about the Wacky Warning Labels contest. The 17th one is taking place right now. He'll talk about the finalists. And we'll meet the founder of Danesyn, a company that makes fine, fine, and very expensive toothpicks. That's coming your way. Plus, of course, we do have an idiot of the day and lots more Stuff File news here on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, 24-year-old Jordan Haskins is Michigan Republicans' best hope for the open state House seat in Saginaw in November. But he is burdened by a teenage past of being young and stupid. Those are his exact words, as he told the Saginaw News in June. Haskins has been in prisons in two states and is still on parole, stemming from trespassing and breaking and entering charges yearly from 2006 to 2011, most involving vehicles he used for sex by himself. He admits to cranking, in which he would remove spark plug wires and try to start the car, pleasuring himself while watching the sparks and listening to the noise. I was in a messed up state of mind, mentally and emotionally, he said, but now is proud of the man he has become. You may not respect my policies or my ideas, but you at least have to respect me as a person. Yeah, that's not happening, pal. No. And in another wingnut election battle, congressional candidate Tim Murray handily lost June's primary election, 82% to 5%, in Oklahoma's 3rd District to incumbent Frank Lucas. But he did not give up. In a rambling letter to KFOR-TV in Oklahoma City, Murray accused Lucas of being a body double for Lucas, since it was widely known, and I'm doing air quotes here, that the real Frank Lucas was executed by order of the World Court in southern Ukraine back in January 2011. Now, Lucas, when asked for a comment, told the station, "It does come as kind of a shock to read that I'm not me." Yeah, well, I'd also go out on a limb that Tim Murray isn't sane. A parental fear of having raised girls and boys who will never marry, plus China's boy-heavy gender imbalance, have provoked the government there to fund a series of matchmaking conventions to create opportunities and incentives for matrimony. However, because of widespread disinterest by singles, many of the attendees at the recent Shanghai Matchmaking Expo were parents touting their kids' credentials to other unmarrieds. A dispatch from Vice.com reported, notice boards full of cards resembling baseball trading cards and makeshift posters attached to umbrellas reciting age, education, and salary. Success of the expos was hard to predict, wrote Vice, because, as is so often the case with social mixers, many singles pass the time in silence, and many desirable candidates were also just plain no-shows. Well, at least with these trading cards, you don't have to hear people saying, got 'em, need 'em, need 'em. Yeah. A Colorado restaurant has a little something extra on the menu. The restaurant is called Shooters, not because it serves shots of alcohol, which it doesn't, but because it encourages everyone, from the waitresses to the customers, to carry guns when they come in. The waitresses' pistols are real, and they're loaded, and we know what we're doing, said owner Lauren Bobart. The restaurant hosts gun safety classes necessary for customers to get concealed carry permits. Dinner is included in the $75 class price. Police Chief John Dyer said he has no problem with it, and besides, they make a really good burger. The local sheriff supports it, too. I encourage people to get a concealed handgun permit, said Garfield County Sheriff Lou Valerio. I think there's a misunderstanding that we can always be there. But I've got about one deputy per 1,000 people. People have the absolute constitutional right to protect themselves. The restaurant is located in the western town of Rifle. Wow. Waitresses packing heat. I'm willing to bet that they are the best tipped waitresses in the world. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, teaching his 7-year-old daughter to ride a bike turned out scarier than one Rosemount, Minnesota father had expected when police said neighbor Gary Drake didn't think he was doing a good job of it. I guess Gary came out and was trying to give tips, said another neighbor. The unnamed father described Drake as yelling, police said, and when the father said, "I've got this," Drake replied, "If you don't like my advice, get off the street." Father and daughter prepared to do so, and Drake got a gun. According to court papers, Drake admitted he'd spent the day drinking, but claimed his actions did not come out of the bottle. Okay, so admitting his actions didn't come out of a bottle means Drake, even sober, is just an obnoxious ass. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? And it's one you're all familiar with. Bob DiRigo Jones is a regular contributor to this show. Each week you hear his Let's Be Fair segments on the program. He's also the guy behind the annual Wacky Warning Labels contest, which proves just how far companies will go to avoid being sued by consumers for stupid mishaps. If you heard last week's show, then you know that the nominations for the 17th annual contest have been announced. So Bob, who is also the author of Remove the Child Before Folding, 101 Stupidest, Silliest, Wackiest Warning Labels Ever, is on to talk with us about this year's entries. He joins us from Michigan via Skype-to-Skype communications. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Peter. Nice to talk with you again.
Always a pleasure to have you on the program. And I know I ask the same question every time I have you on, but each year you come up with these. And I can't imagine. Do you become jaded by the idea that, well, there's just nothing too weird now?
I probably am a little jaded. And it's gotten to the point now where we're looking for themes in the warning labels, because we've noticed some distinct themes from year to year with the warning labels that are being sent to us by people all over North America.
What are the distinct themes?
Last year, there was a theme of warning labels that were there because of a law in California known as Proposition 65. Those of us who don't live in California aren't real familiar with it, but anybody in California sees these warning labels slapped everywhere on products, in coffee shops and grocery stores, and you name it. Even Disney World has a warning label that's called a Prop 65 warning. And what these warnings are in response to a law that was passed in the, I think it was the late 1980s, that said anything that is sold that has even a trace amount of certain chemicals must be identified for the user, because they were trying to get at chemicals that might cause cancer or cause birth defects in pregnant women. But the problem is that a well-intended law went vastly astray, and now anybody that makes a product that includes such a minute amount of a chemical that nobody would even be able to detect has to warn people about those chemicals. And we're seeing warning labels like last year. You may remember we had a product, it was a regular indoor extension cord, and it said wash hands after using. It makes no sense. Nobody ever washes their hands after using a regular extension cord. But because it contained these chemicals, if they didn't have that warning label in California, they could be sued. And we've seen a lot of lawsuits in California over this crazy law. And there, you may remember another warning label from the past. One of my favorites was a 4-inch long fishing lure. It was a kind that has a 3-hook prong hanging from the end, and it says, warning, harmful if swallowed. Well, of course it is. But the fish can't read and they don't know. So who's that for? Well, it's for the personal injury lawyers who would sue that manufacturer if they didn't have that warning label on the product.
Wow. Now, have you heard, either this year or in previous years, from any of the companies, have you contacted any of the companies who have made it to your list of wacky warning labels?
We talk to them quite regularly. Some want the media attention. Others don't. They'd just as soon not be talking about any kind of lawsuits, as frivolous as they usually are, because there is some worry about copycat lawsuits. But most of the companies that we work with and identify with this contest appreciate why we're doing the contest in the first place, which is we're trying to raise awareness of all the ways that Americans are affected by living in the most lawsuit-happy society on earth, with the hope that as we increase awareness of all the ways we're paying for these lawsuits or see them filter through to our everyday lives, that there'll be more pressure on the courts to do the right thing and toss these lawsuits out so that they aren't such a costly problem.
Well, you talk about the fact that it's the most litigious society on the planet. Was there a turning point? Was there a point when somebody had an aha moment, some litigious lawyer going, I've got a case here?
We've done a lot of research into this, and some of the experts on this believe that it was during the 1960s that law schools started teaching that lawsuits could be a good thing rather than a last resort. Throughout most of our history, well over 200 years before the 1960s, lawsuits were always viewed as kind of like the worst thing you could do and as a last resort. Abraham Lincoln preached that. Some of the best federal judges and some of the most famous federal judges in our system said to avoid litigation short of anything like death. So it's only relatively recently in our history, and there are some reasons for this. Some believe that lawsuits were used for some good social changes. For instance, some of the civil rights laws that came about were not passed originally through Congress or state legislatures, but through litigation. So when some positive changes came about to improve social relations, people thought, well, we can use this for other purposes too. And litigation became a tool for affecting public policy rather than as a way to resolve just contracts or so on that really had been the realm of litigation for decades and centuries.
So basically what you're saying is initially it was an end run to a good cause, much like getting Al Capone on tax evasion.
Exactly. And while that could be good, the problem with using litigation to create public policy is that it's not done in the public realm. We like to have our elected legislators creating laws because then it provides opportunities for debate and everything is out in the open. But oftentimes in these lawsuits, things are done in the back rooms between one judge and maybe two lawyers, and the public doesn't have the opportunity to weigh in. So you get policies that are made in one court by one judge that may not reflect the rest of society, and that's not necessarily a good thing.
Okay, let's talk about this year's contest and the nominees, the finalists in this year's contest. I got to tell you right now, my favorite is the one for a Mickey Mouse 4-in-1 ride-on toy.
I love that one too. And your listeners, and you kind of have to see a picture of it to visualize it, because this is a little toy that's intended for a 2 or 3 year old, plastic, but it has about a 3-foot long handle that comes off the end so that a parent can direct the direction of the child. But the warning label on this product says, and I quote, "Do not push vehicle while child is sitting on it." Well, I mean, that kind of defeats the whole purpose of the handle.
And you know, just to describe the handle, it kind of looks like a shovel on wheels.
Exactly. I like that visual.
And another one, a printer ink toner. There's a warning on that.
Yes. Warning, do not drink. Well, how thirsty would you have to be sitting in your office to want to open up that printer and start drinking your toner?
Unbelievable. How many finalists do you have?
We have five finalists, and this is where we kind of got into the theme again. The theme this year was warnings kind of prompted by fears about concussion lawsuits. Now, anybody in North America has who follows football even remotely knows that concussion lawsuits are big news. And sir, I wouldn't say by any stretch of the imagination that all concussion lawsuits are frivolous. I think coaches and leagues have a lot of responsibility to their players to monitor safety. And when they don't do that, then litigation might be a resort. There's a long conversation I could have about that when football was almost banned 100 years ago because of all the deaths taking place on the gridiron. Teddy Roosevelt stepped in and reformed the sport of football with the help of some college presidents and really saved the game. But that being said, some of the warning labels on football helmets these days and things related to football kind of make you scratch your head and say, what? And I'll give you an example. Here is a set of decals. These are peel and stick decals that can go on a football helmet, a bike helmet, skateboards. They're handed out by a sports team, the Buffalo Bills, as a kind of a gift to their fans. But on this little sheet of peel and stick decals, it says, warning, decals are for decoration only and will not prevent bodily harm or injury. I mean, oh, man.
Unbelievable. Oh, we're just about out of time, but I got to ask about one more. The one that catches my eye, too, is a cell phone battery booster. And before we mention what it actually says, I almost get the feeling that this might be something that is built or designed somewhere else. And it sounds like the warning is just a bad translation.
You're absolutely right. And this is another theme we're seeing. Because so many products that are sold in America are built in Asia, they're trying to anticipate the lawsuits they'll have to endure. And so the warning label on this product says, warning, get rid of children. Well, like you said, it makes absolutely no sense. But because they have had experiences with the American litigation system, they know that they have to put all kinds of warnings. And so you see some mistranslations, some warnings that just you don't really know why they're there.
Although I got to admit, a cell phone battery booster, if swallowed, would get rid of children, so they're accurate.
I think you have a point there.
How can people see more of these, and how can people find out about the eventual winners?
They can go to our website, which is centerforamerica.org, and they can see this year's finalists, last year's finalists, and see how they may be able to enter the contest and win that $1,000 grand prize.
Excellent. Bob, always a pleasure to have you on the program, not only when we talk about this, but also each and every week with your segment, Let's Be Fair. Thanks for being on once again.
The pleasure is all mine, Peter. Thanks.
Bob DiRigo-Jones, radio host and author of Remove the Child Before Folding, 101 Stupidest, Silliest, Wackiest Warning Labels Ever. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0256, and you'll find the links to Bob's website. And coming up right now, this week's edition of Let's Be Fair. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Not long ago, I had a chance to take a gondola ride in Venice, Italy. It was something I've looked forward to for years, ever since my first gondola ride in America. You see, my first gondola ride was at a hotel in Las Vegas. It had shallow man-made canals and peaceful rides, but as soon as we sat down, we were told to fasten our seatbelts. I thought that was funny, so when I was finally able to ride in a real canal in Italy, with water over our heads and waves rocking the boat, the first thing I looked for was a seatbelt. Of course, there wasn't one. Without any prodding, the Italian gondolier said that even though America may be the land of the free, it's also the home of the personal injury lawyer. And that's why the only gondolas that have seatbelts are the ones that are used in America. Let's be fair, I still believe America is the home of the brave, but all of our lawsuits really are changing the way we live. And we're not the only ones who have noticed. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Viewer discretion is advised. But then again, why are you staring at a radio program?
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to the founder of Daneson, a company that makes fine artisanal toothpicks. And we will indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way, plus much more stuff file news here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. You know, a lot of people don't have the guts and the time to invest in protesting. That's what Alex Nazini of Houston, Texas says. He's currently on a hunger strike. He goes on to say, hunger strikes is perhaps the most extreme way of dealing with a government that is being difficult, but I have no choice. Whenever someone stops, Nazini tells them of his website to get information on his vital struggle against the oppressive government. This affects everybody in the United States, so listen up, he says. This just won't stand in a civilized society. And what exactly is this beef, you ask? Well, Nazini lives in a high-end neighborhood, and there are several no parking signs near his home. According to a perplexed neighbor, the signs have been up for about 10 years now. They were put up because of the Lamar High School students who come and park in the mornings. And so from 7 to 9, it prevents them from doing just that. Anyway, once in a while, the starving protester pulls off his signs and weighs himself. He said he's lost more than 10 pounds. I feel terrible. Yesterday I drank 2 quarts of water because I was in the heat all day and yesterday was a really hot day. And I threw up most of it, he said. He's out here every business day, sometimes on the weekends, and he doesn't really know how long he can keep it up, says one report. Oh, the humanity. I know I've said this time and time again on this show, but it bears repeating. I don't understand the tactic of hunger strikes, even for the most noble of causes, let alone for parking sign issues like this moron has. I mean, if you want to starve yourself for a cause, I don't see how that is going to affect me in any way, shape, or form. In fact, just as an act of pure spite, I will sit in front of you and eat a 4-course meal. You voluntarily starving yourself doesn't bring to light whatever cause you are fighting for. To me, it just says you have a radical diet plan and a possible death wish. There. Off my soapbox. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, a C4 Delaware school district asked the police to conduct a drug search of the school's buildings and all vehicles in the parking lot. Search dogs alerted on Ryan Harris's vehicle, which was searched. Now, inside they found a bag that allegedly contained 20.8 grams of marijuana, a digital scale, and a glass pipe. Harris was arrested and charged with possession of marijuana with an aggravating factor, which is being in a school zone, and 2 counts of possession of drug paraphernalia. Harris is 33 years old. He's a teacher at the school. Yeah. I was just wondering what he taught. Hopefully it was the metric system. Because, you know, in the U.S., only drug dealers know how to use the metric system. Anyway, let's get to our last guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Last week on the show, I mentioned a couple of stories that I said at the time could only really be first world. But after giving more thought to one of them, I thought, well, this could be interesting. Let's find out more about it. I'm talking about an Ontario company that makes artisanal toothpicks. I must confess, it's not something I've heard of before. So we tracked down Peter Smith, the founder of Daneson, the makers of fine toothpicks, and he's on the line with us right now. Hi, Peter.
Hi there.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
No problem. My pleasure.
As I mentioned in the introduction, this is not something I heard of before. First of all, do you have a lot of competition? Are there a lot of companies or various companies that make high-end toothpicks?
No. There's lots of companies that make toothpicks, and a lot of companies make novelty toothpicks, but I don't think there's really any company out there that makes the same sort of quality product that we do.
So how did this begin for you?
I just spent a long time wanting to start my own business, and then one time I had this brainwave where I knew that my grandmother loved toothpicks, and I just really wanted to start a business that was, based on really sound business principles of trying to do the right thing. When those two ideas sort of came together, I thought, you know, hey, maybe I can start a toothpick company that's a bit more than anything else that's out there.
Okay, so the toothpicks that you make, and first of all, let's start with the company name, Daneson. Where did that name come from?
It's a good question. It's a blend of Denman and Larson, which are the two maiden names in my family. And it's sort of a play on Dane as in Danish, because my mother's side of the family is from Denmark.
Okay. So when you came up with this idea to make these toothpicks, I mean, this is not something you had a previous knowledge about. Did you have to, first of all, teach yourself what it was to make these toothpicks?
Yeah, no, I mean, this is almost like hard to talk about because it's such inane sort of thing to sort of say. But yeah, no, I had to learn a lot about toothpicks, and it took a lot longer than I anticipated. It turns out they're very difficult to make, very high quality toothpicks. It's very difficult to put any sort of flavoring onto wood. It's very difficult to package these things. They're just difficult things in general to work with. If you were to speak to any sort of like engineer or like automation process design engineer, and you put the idea of okay, let's start a toothpick business. You know, once they start thinking about it, they go, oh, all right, well, hey, that's gonna be really hard. And it, as it turns out, it's just been a very steep and long learning curve, but it's, you know, we're up and running, we're selling, and the idea is working out, so it's great.
Well, how many years have you been in business, and at what point did you turn a corner and become successful with it?
We started in 2011 in earnest, and I think prior to that, I spent about 3 years researching, you know, where to and how to do things. And then things really picked up pretty much this week, a year ago, we got hit by a couple of blogs, and things just sort of have been climbing ever since then.
Wow. So yeah. Who primarily, and as I said, they're high-end artisanal toothpicks. These do not come cheap. It's not like you walk into your dollar store and buy a box of toothpicks and you get hundreds of them for a very small price. These are well-made, highly priced toothpicks. So who primarily is your clientele? Are you selling to high-end restaurants? Do you sell to individuals?
It's you know, it's remarkable. I really got to say, it's just about everyone. We have everyone from every single demographic. I mean, I don't even know how to say this. Like, we have very high-end boutiques. Some of some of the top sort of high-end style and fashion boutiques in the world carry our toothpicks in places like London, Paris, Tokyo, Hong Kong, New York. We have some very high-end food boutiques, a boutique in Beverly Hills, Dean and DeLuca in New York. And then in terms of like customers who buy directly from us, it goes the gambit. I mean, it goes, older gentlemen through to, women through to youth, gangsters, motorcycle enthusiasts, you name it. They seem to want to have our toothpicks, which is terrific.
It, as you mentioned, it's a global market. Is there a part of the world or a part of the country or a part of this continent that took to it faster or was quicker on the draw to be a client for you?
I think, just by virtue of running a business in Canada, that market and client is always America, right? And it's just because there's about 330 million of them, and there's about 30 million Canadians. So, an hour or so down the road is one of the biggest markets in the world. So, I mean, that's our dominant market right now.
Okay, so we're talking high-end quality stuff. So we start off with the wood. Yeah. You use Northern White Birch, correct?
Yes.
And what makes that particularly special as when it comes to making a toothpick?
Well, toothpicks are generally made out of any sort of wood that's a veneer quality wood so that it can be turned and turned into ribbons or sheets of wood that can then be chopped into smaller pieces that then get sanded into toothpicks. The alternative is using something like bamboo, but bamboo doesn't really take flavoring very well. It softens up and, just doesn't really handle it very well. So, with that said, I mean, we just wanted to find a source that has just very high quality, Northern White Birch. And the good news on that too is that it's a very fast growing tree. You don't even really have to replant them after they've been cut down, because as soon as you cut one down, it sends up shoots. So, that ticked a couple of boxes. One, it's a high quality source of, wood for toothpicks. And secondly, it renews itself very quickly and without a lot of effort.
And I understand part of it is also the coloring, and that it's a bone white.
Oh, well, yeah. And I mean, then that's part, because you're turning, I mean, if you had a tree with like lots of knots and very hard, dense wood, you get lots of splinters and things like that. So that's anywhere where there's a branch or a knot in the wood, you can't really turn or make a toothpick out of that piece of the wood. So, yeah, I mean, that's how, you know, you make a high quality toothpick, is by using that part of the tree.
Now, I think most of us are familiar when it comes to toothpicks with a flavor on it. We're most familiar with peppermint toothpicks. You see them in restaurants everywhere, but the variety you have is much more than that, right? What do you offer?
Well, we have like a mint, but it has, I think, something like 18 different ingredients in it. We have a cinnamon, which is a blend of cinnamon and peppermint and other mints like that. Again, a lot of different sort of herbs involved in that one. We also have a lemon, a salted, and then we have toothpicks that are a bit more expensive that are soaked in things like bourbon and with things like single malt whiskey.
Wow. And
yeah.
What do they sell for? What's the, I mean, and it's all to do with the packaging and the flavoring and everything about it, but what do they sell for?
Well, I mean, it depends on the packaging size you buy. I mean, we retail on our website boxes, like a four-pack that contains four bottles of toothpicks for $19.99. And then if it's a pack with the single malt or the bourbon involved, because we use real whiskey when making those toothpicks, they sell for $35.99 for four bottles. So, I mean, that's basically on our website, like our direct-to-consumer website, that's the smallest measure you can buy. But if you were to, I suppose, buy those retail in a shop from, like, one of our retailers, the pricing typically ranges from anywhere between, like, $4.99 through to $12, depending on the size of their markup.
And how many toothpicks are we getting for that price?
The minimum you'll get is 12 on occasion, and we try to make it so that there's about 13 or baker's dozen in each bottle.
That's very impressive. Now, again, you only started this a couple of years ago when you told friends and family, you know what, I'm going to start a high-end toothpick company. What was their reaction?
I wouldn't say it was great. I worked in finance leading up to this, and I was living in London, England, and I guess you could say I had a decent career on the go, but I really just wanted to do my own thing, so I kind of had to do this and give it a go. So their response was, I'd still say to this day, it raises eyebrows, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, you certainly literally carved out a niche for yourself. People can find out more information by going to the website, which is daneson.com, daneson.com, correct?
Yes.
And they can order directly from your website if they wanted to?
Yes. They can order those four packs, or they can have a poke around and they can find our retailers. We have those located on our website at daneson.com, and you can see a map with all the retailers and can find locations too where they can buy our toothpicks from them.
Peter, congratulations for coming up with a very unique high-end product, and thank you very much for being on the program.
No problem. My pleasure. Thank you.
Peter Smith, the founder of Daneson, the makers of fine toothpicks. Now, you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0256, and you'll find the links to their website. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
The shindig was roaring along just after midnight. However, it wasn't quite good enough for Richard Hill. He wanted to see a little more enthusiasm out of Samuel Hampton, so he tackled the man and hit him in the head with a glass bird feeder. The official statement from Lancaster County, Pennsylvania troopers said that Hill was upset because Hampton was, quote, refusing to party with him, unquote. While not a legal violation in any state, refusing to party seemed to carry a great deal of weight with Hill. Police say Hill will be charged with assault. Now, why, oh why, would someone who seems to be having a good time get all bent out of shape because someone else isn't quite up to the same party mood that he is? And why would he then beat him over the head with a glass bird feeder? Well, I can think of a couple of reasons. One, he has anger management issues, and more importantly, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0256. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0256. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.